Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. Sandy Williams is here on, and you can also text us at that same number. You know, Sandy, while the Ukraine mess continues to move forward, I was reading this article this morning in Newsweek, and it was, will China invade Taiwan? You know, I guess it's more than a thought. You don't even want to even begin to think about it. But I know the other day there was concern about, you know, China flying some jets in the airspace of Taiwan. But this is what this article had to say. Joe Biden caused something of an international incident recently when he publicly committed to the defense of Taiwan, the island democracy off the coast of China that Beijing has vowed to unify with the mainland, if necessary, by force. Buried behind the headlines of the president's seemingly unequivocal pledge in Tokyo on May 23rd was his assessment that a Chinese invasion of the smaller neighbor will not happen and will not be attempted. But this scenario, Biden says, would be contingent upon the world's ability to convince Beijing of potential long-term disapprobation should it attack Taiwan. Sandy, why are we even talking about that?
Well, because we've for decades, ever since 1950, allowed ourselves and the rest of the world to have a very complicated public and private diplomatic policy associated with the island that was Taipei, that then was Formosa. You know, when we were growing up, everyone knew it as Formosa. Now it's Taiwan. And the fact is that island is not recognized by the United States as a country. And we are very careful to indicate to the world and to China that we have a one China policy, one China meaning that Taiwan is a part of China. So while we allow the press and maybe the president to talk sort of generically about how Taiwan is a democracy, Taiwan is actually, as far as we're concerned, diplomatically, part of the sovereign territory of China. And the question really is, what kind of a relationship does China have with its territory, Taiwan? Similar to the world's view of what kind of a relationship did China have with its territory, Hong Kong? Because at the end of the term of the English lease of the Hong Kong territory, they had something like a lease of an apartment. They had a lease of the nation of Hong Kong, or the geography of Hong Kong. At the end of that lease, it reverted to China. It was Chinese territory and up to China for how they would treat it. And while we all stood aghast and were upset with the fact that China was going to assert control over Hong Kong, that's what it's done.
So is this...
And that's what it could do over Taiwan. We've armed Taiwan to the teeth, much the way we armed Ukraine to the teeth, in a way that allows Taiwan to potentially assert itself against China and to try and assert its independence from China. But when push comes to shove, and when the people in the State Department are asked about what Joe Biden said, they always correct it and say, no, we haven't changed our policy. We still have a one China policy. We still have what we call strategic ambiguity about our policy towards China. So all this sword rattling is, I guess, designed to make sure that China does not do something that is offensive to the world about the way they assert their sovereignty over Taiwan.
You know, Sandy, you said offensive to the world. We are at a, you know, we know that when they say offensive to the world, we mean offensive to the United States. And China knows that, you know, that behind all of this, again, is our bombast that we continue. When do we grow past this, Sandy? You know, that may have worked on China 40 years ago, you know, 100 years ago, it certainly doesn't scare them today.
No. And in fact, I had a conversation with a friend who was part of the intelligence apparatus of the United States for an entire career. And the conversation was about this vision of hegemony, this notion that there is a geopolitical sphere of influence for large powers. And clearly, the United States believe we have hegemony. Heck, since 1990, we've asserted our hegemony over the world. I mean, we're basically asserting hegemony over Ukraine by reaching there, sending them weapons, getting all involved in the negotiation and the situation they have with their geopolitical neighbor, Russia. And yet we're denying Russia its hegemony over what is clearly a part of its geopolitical sphere of influence, which is Ukraine. And so this is a very dangerous kind of foreign policy that we've adopted, because clearly there are certainly two, and based on armaments, three major powers in the world: Russia, China, and the United States. And if we are the only nation that's allowed to assert its hegemony, and we don't allow those other two to have their geopolitical realities, we're putting ourselves in a very dicey position, because geopolitical reality is meant to respect and to reflect realities. And the reality is that we aren't going to send troops to a place like Ukraine because it's not geopolitically important enough to us. Similarly, Taiwan is geopolitically a part of China, and it's really not geopolitically, other than the fact that they make lots of silicon chips, which incidentally, the ones that aren't made there are made in Shanghai. So, you know, I'm not sure what we're arguing about here.
You know, Sandy, if at some point in time, if the American people don't go outside of what we are normally learning about the world, or if we're relying on others to educate us about what is happening in the world and not finding out on our own and not looking to find out exactly what is taking place, it's a recipe for long-term for disaster, Sandy. The American people still believe that we're the kings, we're the king makers, and everybody's going to dance to the beat of our drums. That's no longer going to fly. And so the American people think that we're superior in all aspects, and you know that we're not. But at some point in time, we've got to come to that realization, Sandy, or it's not going to get any better for us.
Well, if we don't come to that realization, the size of our military budget is going to become so oversized. I mean, the result of Ukraine and then the discussion of Taiwan has led American political figures to talk about having a military annual budget that's in excess of $1 trillion. And that's exhausting on the American economy. It's exhausting on our social stability, because the fact that we spend that kind of money is rendering us and creating the problem for Tom, Dick, and Mary that I was describing in the first hour of the show, which is we can't tolerate the business cycle because Tom, Dick, and Mary don't have government support and a social apparatus to support them like exists in Europe. We don't have child daycare. We don't have health care. So when someone in the United States gets laid off, they fall into a desperate situation. And that's not the case in Europe. And it's not the case in Europe when prices rise that people suddenly can't afford the necessities of life, because they have a safety net that supports them. And if we had that safety net in the United States, we'd be having a whole different discussion today about what's going on.
But Sandy, we've got the American people, a segment of the American people who don't believe in safety nets. They believe it's a handout. And
They don't believe in social safety nets, but they believe in this Pax Americana principle of American exceptionalism that has us running around the world, putting ourselves in the position of being in very fraught military problems and situations, and therefore spending a huge amount of money on our military budget. So And yet, you know, for instance, we talk about the democracy in Taiwan. I'd be interested in just how democratic Taiwan is, because many of the countries that we are allied with are not democracies. That's for sure. In fact, we're sending emissaries right now to Saudi Arabia to try and patch up our relationship with Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is the mirror image of a democracy. There is nothing democratic about what goes on in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, but they've got the oil.
Yeah, exactly.
No, and so you know, Sandy, you look at these things and you say, well, if the American people really, enough of us, I shouldn't say that there aren't any, but there certainly does not appear to be enough of us who see long term this is unsustainable. It's unsustainable. It may not happen in your or my lifetime, but it is unsustainable. And
yes, I mean,
go ahead.
Well, I mean, it's unsustainable in a way that actually puts at risk. We talk about our military being sent out to save America and to make America safe and free. And yet this expenditure of money without regard to taking care of Tom, Dick, and Mary in our country is actually putting America at risk, serious risk, because of the social consequences in America of not having in place the things that are needed to protect its people and to provide welfare to its people creates a much greater risk than could ever exist from a Chinese exercise of sovereignty over Taiwan.
You know, it is. On the one hand, it feels good to say, well, you know, we just had Memorial Day and people celebrate and they talk about the lives that were sacrificed, Sandy, to make the nation what it is, and we're proud of all of those things. And I'm not saying we shouldn't be proud of all those things, but all of those lives were lost, Sandy, and you got to ask the questions. In some instances, they were lost unnecessarily, and nobody pushed back on it. It's what you talk about, the fact that at some point in time, we've got to be willing to push back on things, or there'll always be more martyrs that we'll be celebrating on Memorial Day. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. You're tuning into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be back.